from the Reynolds Journalism Institute at the Missouri School of Journalism. Welcome to Global Journalist. I'm Jason McClure. Donald Trump has suggested that as president, he'll nominate U.S. Supreme Court justices that would overturn Roe v. Wade, the landmark case that ended many abortion restrictions in the U.S. So what might happen if the court did overturn Roe? To explore this, we're going to turn to the Republic of Ireland, which has one of the world's most restrictive abortion laws. Abortion is illegal in the heavily Catholic country in all cases except when the life of the woman is at risk. Now, both the woman or the doctor performing the abortion can face up to 14 years in prison if convicted. The abortion ban is enshrined in the Eighth Amendment to Ireland's constitution, but recent polling in the country has shown that a majority of people favor fewer restrictions on abortion. Now, to learn more about the Irish experience outlawing abortion, we've got a great panel of guests. But first, we'll hear from Alva Smith. She's the chairwoman of the Coalition to Repeal the Eighth Amendment, a group seeking to overturn Ireland's abortion ban. Alva, welcome to Global Journalist.
Hi, Jason.
Tell us, if you would, the U.S. seems likely to move towards greater restrictions on abortion in the coming years. What's the current political climate in Ireland like regarding its constitutional ban?
Well, I think that we are going in the opposite direction, because certainly our polls and our experience on the ground is demonstrating very clearly that Irish people want to see a change. They want the ban against abortion to be removed from the constitution. I think this is coming across really very, very clearly. One of our difficulties is that we don't yet have a commitment from government to hold a referendum, because that's what has to happen, obviously, for the constitution to be changed.
Well, but things, tell me if you would, I'm sorry, go ahead, but what are a woman's options now in Ireland if she does want an abortion and her life isn't in danger?
Well, there are three options. She doesn't have an abortion at all because she can't access any of the means that are open to some women. Some women, if they are able to afford to do so, and if they have other resources, if they have the time, if they have the kinds of citizenship papers that are necessary, they can go abroad, generally to the UK, for an abortion. But that's expensive. And as I say, you know, you've got to get time off work, you have to have childcare, you have to physically be able to make the journey. There are a lot of reasons why it's difficult for women to make that trip. The other option that's now increasingly available to women is to take the abortion pill, which they can obtain online, although technically that is illegal, and they could be subjected to 14 years in prison, as indeed could anybody who helps them to obtain the abortion pill online. So those are the three options. You don't have access to abortion at all. Or you go to Britain, which approximately 3,500 women do every year, or you get the abortion pill illegally online, which we reckon approximately 1,000 women between the north and the south actually do every year now.
And so just to update us, in Northern Ireland, abortion is illegal as well. So it's not a matter of just going across the border into the UK on the same island. You actually have to go to Britain, to England, to Scotland.
Exactly. The 1967 Abortion Act, which applies on mainland Britain, does not apply in the north of Ireland. So it's very, very difficult for women in the north to obtain an abortion. It's available only to protect the woman's life, or in the case of a very, very grave risk to her health. Otherwise, women in the north also have to go across to mainland Britain for an abortion.
And you're leading one of the groups that is seeking this change. How receptive has the government, how receptive has Prime Minister Enda Kenny been to this issue?
Well, it's very interesting. The government, which is minority government, which is operating with the support of independents, has effectively recognised and acknowledged that this is a very important issue for people in Ireland. It's one that's not going to disappear off anybody's agenda any day soon. And rather than taking his courage in his hands and deciding to call a referendum, what he decided to do was to set up what he has called a citizens' assembly, which is to discuss and debate the issue and specifically recommend to government whether a referendum should be held or not. And when the Citizens' Assembly has finished its business, which it will have to do by June of 2017, the recommendations will be referred to a committee in our Parliament, the Dáil, which in turn will make a recommendation to government. So it's quite a lengthy process that we're looking at the moment. And this, it's worth bearing in mind, is in a country where we have had endless official bodies of one kind or another discussing and debating this issue since 1983. We've had three sets of referendums. We have had endless constitutional groups and other groups talking about it. So the government is quite clearly indicating to us that it's acknowledging the importance of the issue, but not wanting to grasp the nettle and take leadership and call a referendum.
And we did invite a number of activists from the pro-life anti-abortion movement in Ireland to come on the program. Unfortunately, none of them accepted. But we do have a clip of Cora Sherlock of Ireland's pro-life campaign speaking in an interview last year.
I think it's important to remember that if you look over the last 12 years, the numbers of women travelling to the UK has actually decreased. The number of women regretting their abortion has increased over that time. Now, that should tell us something about the fact that abortion itself is not something that we should be advocating. It's not something that any group should be advocating for women.
So she is saying that the law as it is now has been effective. It's reducing the number of women travelling to get abortions. What's your response?
Well, I think what's very important to bear in mind about the numbers is that they have actually remained extremely consistent over the past 10 to 12 years. That is to say that approximately 5,000 women in Ireland every year manage to access abortion services either in Britain or by using the abortion pill. So I think that those are just the figures. We do know, by the way, that the figures are probably higher in that some women who go to Britain give addresses in Britain rather than giving addresses in Ireland. We also know that there are women who access abortion, say, in the Netherlands or in Spain. So the numbers are actually remaining very steady indeed. And the numbers of women who are beginning now very courageously to speak out about their experience of abortion has increased quite dramatically over the past 2 to 3 years. So we are hearing about various different kinds of experiences, but overall, something like 90-95% of the experiences that we hear are of women who have made the journey, and while explaining and talking about the distress that caused, the trauma that causes of having to make the journey, that they made that journey for very good reasons, their own very good reasons, and that this was something they wanted to do. They went ahead with it despite the stress, despite the distress, and they don't regret having made that particular journey.
Elva Smith, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Jason.
A reminder that you're listening to Global Journalist. I'm Jason McClure. With Donald Trump suggesting that as president he would appoint justices who would overturn Roe v. Wade, we're looking at Ireland, where abortion has long been outlawed except to save the life of the pregnant woman. Now, to broaden our discussion, we're going to bring in three other Irish guests. Joining us from Dublin is Sinead O'Carroll. She's an editor at the news site thejournal.ie. From Cork in Ireland's south is Conor O'Mahony. He's a senior lecturer in constitutional law and child law at University College Cork. And in Paris is Una Mulally. She's a columnist for the Irish Times and author of In the Name of Love, a 2014 book about the campaign for same-sex marriage in Ireland. Welcome to all of you. Sinead O'Carroll, you've highlighted in your work how the abortion issue became particularly divisive in Ireland in the early 1990s. At that time, the country's attorney general, I understand, brought a case against a 13-year-old girl who had been raped and was trying to travel to England to obtain an abortion. Can you tell us just a little bit about that case and sort of what the outcome has been?
Yeah, it was an extremely sad case in our history, resulting from the Eighth Amendment in 1983. Obviously, it was illegal for anyone in Ireland to obtain abortion, our laws and the constitutional amendment. When this girl went to travel, she had been raped by a family friend. Her parents knew about it. They discovered she was pregnant. They brought her to England. She was actually in England, and they had looked for the advice of Gardaí, wondering if anything that remained from the abortion could they actually use in court. The Gardaí then had questions whether this would be admissible and went to the Attorney General. The Attorney General said he had to uphold the law and stop her from having an abortion because it would be illegal. This became huge, huge news in Ireland. People took to the streets as the court cases were ongoing. It went to the High Court and to the Supreme Court, and people took sides. Some people felt that she shouldn't have an abortion, that she should continue with her pregnancy, and that abortion should remain illegal in this case. Obviously, there was a huge number of people who could not see the right in making a 14-year-old girl have a pregnancy through rape and continue it on. She was eventually allowed to travel. She actually miscarried in the end after the Supreme Court said that she did have the right to travel because her life was in danger due to suicide. So that brought in a clause then that if your life was in danger due to suicide as well, then you were allowed to have an abortion. Obviously, it's an incredibly difficult thing to prove or to judge, and that's something that we've been grappling with since over the last 20 years.
And Conor O'Mahony, I want to ask you about a couple circumstances where abortion is allowed in many countries. One is the case of rape or incest, as in this case, and the other is if the fetus has fatal abnormalities and can't survive on its own after birth. Where is public opinion in Ireland on these types of issues?
So on those two issues, Jason, I think the situation would be the public opinion, as suggested in recent polls, would it would indicate that public opinion would favour allowing abortion in those two particular cases around fetal abnormality or rape. They're not currently situations where abortion is permitted under the law, because in those situations the life of the mother isn't at risk. Public opinion certainly would seem to suggest that the law should be liberalised to that extent. What is perhaps somewhat less clear is how much further than that public opinion is willing to go. So there are different polls taken on this at different times. And if you extend beyond that to circumstances perhaps where the health of the mother is at risk, or beyond that to simply where the mother chooses not to continue with the pregnancy and wishes to have an abortion for whatever her own personal reasons are, the polls would show different figures when you get to that level. And so I think the process which Alva referred to, the Citizens Assembly, what that's attempting to do really is to try and generate some consensus around what the shape of reform would be. Now, some people are taking quite a cynical view of it and saying it's simply kicking the issue to touch and it's a delaying tactic. And there's probably an element of that. But I think at the same time, if you're going to have a referendum, the history in Ireland of referendums is that very often strong support in opinion polls doesn't necessarily translate into a strong support on polling day. And we've seen that in the past in issues such as divorce. So I think what the Citizens Assembly is trying to do is to maybe take the temperature of public opinion in a little more detail and try and generate some consensus around what exactly people would be voting on if there is to be a referendum, and how far should that liberalisation go.
And I wanted to turn this to Una Mullally too, because there was a change in the law, as I understand it, back in 2013 in Ireland, and it came about after a really high-profile case involving a 31-year-old dentist named Savita Halappanava. Can you tell us about that case and what the outcome was?
Yeah, Savita Halappanava was a woman living in Galway in the west of Ireland, and she presented to the hospital during her pregnancy, and it transpired that she was going into septic shock. She had huge complications with her pregnancies. She repeatedly asked for to have an abortion, which her husband also asked for as well. And that was denied because of the law. And she subsequently died. This caused, you know, yet another huge moment of public outrage, public sympathy, and in a very sad way, but in a very real way, galvanized, you know, another movement again to...
And the doctors refused to perform the abortion because they weren't sure if they would be prosecuted for performing the abortion, even though it appeared that her life was in danger.
Yeah, I mean, it just wouldn't happen. It wouldn't happen in Ireland. I mean, the legislation, the protection of the mother during pregnancy bill, that actually allows for abortion in these really restrictive circumstances, followed that, you know. So we are living in a very unusual setting, really, in that Ireland is probably the only country in the democratic Western world that has a constitutional ban on abortion. And really, the conversation is kind of about, you know, why is the constitution governing over this? It was something that was introduced in 83. So to have any movement on this whatsoever, the Eighth Amendment needs to go.
And Sinead O'Carroll, you had mentioned earlier the same-sex marriage issue in Ireland. Tell us about that, because that was passed last year. And so it does seem like there is a willingness to break with the teachings of the Catholic Church on some social issues in Ireland. Why do you think there was political support to have same-sex marriage in Ireland, but it's not entirely clear that there's same-sex marriage for fewer abortion restrictions there?
Yeah, I think some people have conflated the two issues as social issues, that maybe the country has moved with the times on both issues. But really, the abortion issue, while it can be framed a lot in the Catholic construct of our past, I think when you described Ireland as a very Catholic country now, that's not quite true. We're probably Catholic on paper, but not actually in practice in the majority. But I think on the social issue of abortion and the pro-life movement was so incredibly strong here in the 80s. When Roe v. Wade happened in America, the pro-life movement like galvanized together, and that's why we have the constitutional amendment. They were worried that something similar to Roe v. Wade, they were watching what was happening in the US Supreme Court and making sure that it couldn't happen here. So we were kind of working in the opposite direction. The pro-life groups came together to make sure that was inserted into the amendment. So that's the starting point you're coming from on abortion and how strong the pro-life movement is here in the grassroots elements. And so when politicians are looking at those constituencies and they're looking at their constituents and the makeup of them and the people who vote, they're looking and thinking, if the older part of those still have those feelings about abortion, about that pro-life movement, they don't want to touch it. It's not the same as same-sex marriage, where the only outcome can be joy, really. Same-sex marriage.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Connor, go ahead.
I think what Sinead is saying there is really accurate, that there can be a somewhat lazy tendency to say that just because people in Ireland were strongly in favour of marriage equality, that they will be similarly in favour of liberalising abortion laws. And it's not just a generational thing. I think abortion in Irish politics has always stood on its own. It's completely different to pretty much every other issue. And I know certainly I would have spoken myself to quite a number of people who were very much in favour of marriage equality, but still have reservations about what might be described as a very liberal abortion regime. You know, people who might want to see some degree of liberalisation, but would be uncomfortable with what is sometimes framed as abortion on demand. So it just stands on its own as an issue of Irish politics. Yeah, I think, you know, you have to look at it really as something that stands apart, and you can't just pigeonhole it with the other issues that are framed as those sort of religious versus secular issues.
If you're just joining us, I'm sorry. We're going to do a quick break here, and then I'll turn to you next, Una. I just want to remind our listeners that this is Global Journalist. I'm Jason McClure. We're talking today about abortion in Ireland, where the practice is outlawed in all cases except to save the life of the woman. We're joined by Sinead O'Carroll, an editor at the Irish news site thejournal.ie, Conor O'Mahony, a law lecturer at the University College Cork, and Una Mullally, a columnist for the Irish Times. For more Global Journalist content, you can visit our website, globaljournalist.org. There you'll find our ongoing coverage of underreported international issues, including an interview with an Irish woman who traveled to England to obtain an abortion after she was raped and impregnated. You can also check out Global Journalist on Facebook or Twitter, or subscribe to the videocast of this program on YouTube. Una Mullally, I wanted to turn it to you. If you want to touch on some of those points about Catholicism, I'd be interested in that. But I was also interesting if you could give us a breakdown of how people divide demographically in Ireland on this issue. Is it a case where it's young versus old or rural versus urban? How does that work?
Well, just on the Catholicism aspect and on, you know, the correlation between marriage equality and abortion laws, I suppose what it does show is that misogyny is far more embedded in Irish society than homophobia is. And I think that we have a long and, very ugly history of trying to gain control over women's bodies, imprisoning women for being sexual beings, We have the history of the Magdalen laundries. We have the history of child trafficking of women's babies in those religious institutions. So there is this, pathological desire that still remains when it comes to female sexuality in Ireland. And the pro-life campaigns are very much embedded in a fundamentalist Catholicism or an evangelical Christianity as well.
I think certainly the pro-life campaigns would disagree vigorously with the idea that if you're pro-life or anti-abortion, it's misogynistic. But how does the population as a whole, how does that break down in terms of support? Who supports which side? Or is it something that can't be broken down demographically?
Well, interestingly, the polls show a real varying opinions, that there isn't that big of an urban-rural divide that you would think. Yes, there is a kind of a more liberal attitude towards, women's reproductive rights amongst younger people than older people. But there have been really interesting polls done, for example, on male rural farmers who, kind of overwhelmingly want to see progress made on reproductive rights laws and movement made on the Eighth Amendment. So Ireland is a kind of a funny country in dealing with its Catholic roots and also recognising them with the realities of people's lives. I think one of the powerful things that's happening now is, that people are finally, women are breaking the stigma that existed for so many years about actually talking about these things. I mean, so many women are sharing their stories now, in order to highlight the wide variety of, abortion stories that there are out there. That's been happening for, a year or so now. And the fact is, women and high-profile women coming out even a few years ago, 4 years ago, talking about their abortions, talking about their journeys to England to have them would have been unthinkable. So there is progress being made on this. And ultimately, when it comes down to it, it's very difficult to.
So, in other words, sort of the social stigma around this has decreased, then, it seems.
It has decreased. I mean, at the same time, there's a huge amount of backlash and online harassment and so on of women who are sharing their stories, which is not good at all. But it also shows how divisive this issue is in Ireland, as it is, around the world. And we're seeing the rolling back of women's rights in many countries, such as some American states, such as Poland. So, this is something that's very live. It's one of the last big battles, certainly, I think, for the Catholic Church in Ireland, apart from education system, because over 90% of our schools are under the patronage of the Catholic Church. So it's a massive issue. It's extraordinarily divisive, and any progress made on it is going to be very difficult.
Well, Sinead, we heard Una talking. Yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead if you want to touch on those points.
I was just going to pick up on something that Una said, probably touching on what she said about misogyny and the fact that we have this, what we call here, an Irish solution to an Irish problem. The fact that we have access to the UK, that it is a ferry trip or a short plane trip away. Politicians and I think a lot of people feel like, and this is an anecdote that our theory that goes around with when groups of people talk about this, that there is a feeling among some people that it should be difficult to have an abortion, that there should be some punishment going with it. And I think that's the worrying part, that we have this access to the UK, because I think there is a feeling out there amongst probably too many people or a lot of people that actually it's okay that it's a bit hard, that it's a little bit of a punishment because you're making a decision that people are not quite comfortable with all the time. And I think that's one of probably the hurdles that the repeal coalition and the repeal groups will have to come to overcome to pass any referendum to repeal the Eighth.
And I think that point is actually analogous to the United States, because Donald Trump has suggested that if Roe v. Wade were overturned, some states would ban abortion or restrict it significantly. Women in those states would have to travel to a different state where abortion had fewer restrictions on it. So it seems there's quite a parallel there. But Conor O'Mahony, if I could turn this to you then. One of the ideas that has been talked about is holding not a referendum, but something called a preferendum to try to assess people's varying views on when abortion should and shouldn't be allowed there. Tell us about that idea.
Well, the idea of the preferendum is that it gets you away from the very rigid binary choice model that we have in the referendum. The problem with the referendum is that what has to happen is that there is an agreed amendment to the Constitution first, and then people vote yes or no on it. And so it's something of a straitjacket, and it really means that before you can ever get to the point of a referendum being held, an awful lot of consensus has to be built. Whereas with a preferendum, you could put more than one option on the ballot, very varying degrees of liberalisation and allow the people to choose between those. I think if you had that model available, it might overcome some of the roadblocks we have at the moment around getting this to a public vote, that essentially Parliament has to nail its colours to the mast before we can have a referendum. They have to say this is the reform that we are supporting and we are voting on to get it on the ballot paper. And that slows things down. The referendum might allow things to progress to voting at a quicker pace. The difficulty is that it's not currently permissible under our constitutional structure. The constitution only allows for a two-choice yes or no referendum. And as long as we are stuck within that model, as I say, what needs to happen is that you need to get that consensus within Parliament of what is the model for reform. Are we going for abortion on demand or are we going for something more restrictive than that? And building that consensus before they actually pass the measure that is needed to be passed in order to get the thing to a public vote. I might just very briefly respond to some of the things Una and Sinead were saying. I mean, you know, accepting where they're coming from on their perspective on it relating to women's rights and misogyny, and I think from where they're coming from, that's a very valid perspective. But as you mentioned, Jason, people on the pro-life side simply don't see it like that. They see it that they have a genuinely held belief that an unborn child is a human life. And really, that is the primary motivation, I think, for a lot of those people. And, you know, to characterise them all as misogynistic, I think, is it may be the impact of that from the perspective of the person who is restricted by the law, but I'm not sure it would necessarily be the motivation that the people who are pushing resistance to reform would be saying that's where they're coming from.
I certainly wasn't characterising individuals. I think it's more a societal kind of overarching.
Una Mulally, our time does grow short, so I'm just going to throw the last question to you then. Looking forward here in a couple of years, there's talk of having this referendum in 2018. Pope Francis is actually scheduled to come to Ireland in 2018. He's obviously quite popular there, as he is in many countries. What effect might that have on this? Where do you see this going?
Well, it's a coincidence, really, isn't it? I know it was a meeting that was scheduled a while ago. I do think that... you know, Irish people talk a lot about sovereignty, especially in the wake of the economic collapse in 2008. But the fact is, there are large interventions by the hierarchy of the Catholic Church in Irish social life, in our education, in our health systems, and indeed in our constitution. And we have to remember the roots of this constitutional ban was very much rooted in a certain aspect of the Catholic Church and their supporters. So when it comes down to the coincidence of Pope Francis visiting Ireland around the potential time of a referendum, and certainly when there's huge movement of progress being made in a popular protest movement, grassroots movement around people talking about reproductive rights, you know, it will certainly add to that conversation in whatever way. I mean, this is a country where Mother Teresa intervened in the run-up to a divorce referendum. So
I'm sorry, Una, we're just out of time, so we're going to have to end it there for this edition of Global Journalist, a production of the Missouri School of Journalism and KBIA Mid-Missouri Public Radio. Many thanks to Alva Smith, Sinead O'Carroll, Connor O'Mahony, and Una Mulally. Our assistant producers this week are Alejandra Arredondo, Steve Dawson, and Hui Lanzan. Our visuals editor is Anadil Iftikhar. Vera Tan is our supervising producer. Pat Akers is our audio engineer. Our director is Travis McMillan of the Reynolds Journalism Institute. For all of us at Global Journalist, I'm Jason McClure. Thanks for tuning in.